Support for Tested comes from Duke Health, reminding listeners that COVID-19 vaccines are safe, effective, and can protect individuals and others from the virus. Together, communities can end this pandemic. Find sites for a free vaccine at DukeHealth.org.
This is Tested from WUNC, a look at how we're responding to the day's challenges in North Carolina and the South. I'm Anissa Khalifa.
This photo series is an unapologetic archive of our feelings and emotions. It is a vessel for self-healing. Despite continued obstruction by whiteness, we will heal, even if it is tarred.
That's photographer Cornell Watson, who was working on an exhibition called Tarred Healing for the Sonia Haynes Stone Center for Black Culture and History at UNC Chapel Hill. Less than a week before it was set to open, the center notified him that they were canceling it, and a move the artist labeled as censorship, and Stone Center director Joseph Jordan called justified. WUNC's education reporter Liz Schlemmer, who reported this story, joins me to break down what happened. Liz, this isn't the first time we've heard concerns about freedom of expression at UNC. The most infamous, of course, is the fight over granting Nicole Hannah-Jones tenure last summer. But can you refresh our memories about some others?
Right, tenure is all about securing a professor's academic freedom. In another incident last June, the Board of Governors did not approve law professor Eric Mueller's reappointment to the UNC Press Board. And this happened after he publicly criticized the Board of Governors' dealings with Silent Sam. There were also some concerns voiced by faculty that the appointment of Chris Clemens as provost was tainted by outside influence.
And in this context, we have the sudden cancellation of a photo exhibition about Black life at UNC. How did this all begin?
Cornell Watson is a Durham-based photographer, and he was approached by the Stone Center because they were impressed with his past work on a photo series published by the Washington Post. The Stone Center invited him to be a visiting artist, and the director described a theme for an exhibition that they wanted him to create that would go on display in their gallery on campus. Here's Cornell Watson.
It was a mixture of documentary photos and conceptual photos that told a story about Black spaces in a story form that I call Tarred Healing, which was basically about those spaces threaded through the healing process of the Black community in and around Chapel Hill and the university. And after I presented that photo story, they didn't like some of the images that were in there and didn't feel that it fit what they wanted in the exhibition. And I, in one of the exhibition planning meetings, basically told them that like taking away a part of the story, the body of work that I had completed, is basically censorship. And they disagreed on the term censorship. I don't know what else we would call it if it's not censorship.
Which photos did the Stone Center have an issue with?
There were three photos that Watson reluctantly agreed not to display at the Stone Center because they had objected to them, and those are of demonstrations on campus in support of Nicole Hannah-Jones. Two depict the Board of Trustees meeting where the board ultimately did vote to offer her tenure. And in one of those, protesters are holding up signs, including one that simply says academic freedom. The second image foregrounds a white administrator, Clayton Summers, and he's turning and has kind of a displeased stare at the camera. Summers is known to have been involved in the legal deal to give a pro-Confederate group $2.5 million in university funds for taking the Silent Sam statue. A third photo from student demonstrations is of Julia Clark. She's the vice president of the Black Student Movement, and the photo shows her holding a bullhorn in front of a crowd. And then there was also a fourth photo that the Stone Center did not want, but did agree to display. And that was a conceptual image of a silhouette of a man holding a noose above the Unsung Founders Memorial, which is a memorial on campus to enslaved and free Black people who built the university.
The photos of the student demonstrations was the hottest contention point. And they said their thoughts were that they didn't think that it was a part of the story. And my argument is that, like, it's a part of the story. The student demonstrations, and especially a lot of, like, what they were saying were tied to a lot of those spaces. They have been fighting for memorialization of James Cates and protection for the Unsung Founders Memorial. And as it relates to the photo of Clayton Summers at the student demonstration, how can we talk about reckoning? How can we talk about healing if we're not going to talk about what we're reckoning and what we're healing from?
So if they had agreed on what would be displayed, then why did the Stone Center cancel the exhibition?
When the full photo story published in the Washington Post in February, Watson shared the article with the Stone Center out of excitement, and he received an abrupt email back from director Joseph Jordan saying that they were canceling the exhibition.
And then when I asked for a follow-up, they said it was because the full photo story had published in the Washington Post before the exhibition, and that they were not going to mount it. And I was angry. And I had a lot of emotions around that because a lot of work had went into that. A lot of people were planning to come to the exhibition.
Were you surprised?
Yeah, I was surprised because the photos were in the gallery space, laying on the floor, ready to be mounted. Also surprised because, like, who wouldn't want publicity from, like, a national publication, the Washington Post?
Stone Center director Joseph Jordan explained his reasoning in a press Q&A after the story broke.
We would have no problem with it appearing in the Post. If it had appeared after our opening, can you imagine that we provide support for a visiting artist with a fellowship to produce something for us and it appears someplace else first? Come, I mean, you know, seriously. Now, let me also say this. If it had appeared 2 days after we opened, not only would we have supported it, we would have been happy for it because it would have been more publicity for us. But this is what I will say. What Mr. Watson did is that he did that and he put those pieces in there that we feel are absolutely opposite to what we were trying to transmit. I think it disrespects the families that cooperated with him. I think it disrespects us because it didn't let us know. And I think he also understands that that was the issue. He wants those pieces to be seen, and he wanted them to be seen as part of this. And he didn't care how we felt about it. We care how we feel about it because it represents us.
Jordan also explained why he found Cornell's additional images disrespectful.
You saw families, you saw sites, you saw individuals in the act of what we call sacralizing, going to a place and communing with their ancestors, communing with particular ideas of history. And then you cut to a board member alone looking back at a camera.
Reporters asked whether the Stone Center had a written contract with Watson laying out expectations for the residency, which they did not, outside of an offer letter. There were no licensing agreements. And so then, of course, people asked, why not? And here's what Jordan said.
Working with artists, there's an etiquette. And I think that that's an etiquette that we had expected. I think you're also bringing up something that we had never had to do before, but perhaps we'll have to do it in the future.
At a campus forum after canceling the exhibition, Jordan admitted that he had not consulted with any of the subjects in the photos about that decision and said he should have.
James Cates, who white supremacists murdered on campus, still needs us to fight for justice. Nicole Hannah-Jones showed us that we still need to fight for equity and equality. The UNC Board of Trustees showed us that we still need to fight for diversity. Roger Eubanks still needs us to fight against environmental injustice. Our ancestors still need us to fight for our history to be remembered and honored. We still need to fight and dismantle institutions of white supremacy. We still need to fight for reparations. We need to recognize with intentionality the many forms in which our diverse community seeks healing.
That's from Watson's artist statement for Tarred Healing. The idea of ongoing struggle as healing is foundational to the Stone Center. Generations of Black students fought for it to be established and housed in a freestanding building. It's named for Sonia Haynes Stone, who had her own bitter fight for tenure at UNC.
I spoke to Danita Mason Hogans, who's a member of the Generational Black Chapel Hill community. She's been involved in trying to get the full photo series displayed locally.
I was a part of those Nicole Hannah Jones protests. I was also a part of the protest to get the Black Culture Center named after Dr. Sonia Haynes Stone. So for me and my relationship with the university, which has been embodied by Cornell's photographs, those stories of protest are tremendously important to us local people because it was the students who initiated a lot of the better conditions that the local generational people had been beset with. So it was students who organized for better wages with the housekeepers, which my grandmother was a housekeeper. It was the students who organized for better wages and better treatment at the food worker strike. It was students who organized for James Cates and recognition. Those were the students who did that back in the 1970s. So for me, resistance is also part of Carolina's story. And so I find those photographs incredibly important, not only appropriate, but I think it's important part of the story that we have here.
Watson says after showing the full photo series to the Clark family, who are represented in two of the final images, he felt proud and validated. Danita Mason Hogans also reached out to Watson when she first saw the series.
She called to let me know how proud she was after she had seen the photo story in the Washington Post. And it was just really, truly a moment of validation that like all the work that I had done really meant something.
Liz, you told me that what initially drew you to this story was the irony that the Stone Center first reached out to Cornell Watson specifically because of his Behind the Mask series in the Washington Post. That was about how Black people self-censor in white spaces. And then, in the end, the center asked him to remove part of his vision for the project because they didn't like it.
Yeah, Watson told the Stone Center in an email that he felt like they were asking him to wear the mask. Here he is reading from his artist statement for the Behind the Mask series.
Mask, a protective covering. This photo series is in honor of my ancestors who smiled when they were not happy, laughed when nothing was funny, and cried when they were not sad so that I could be here today. This is for the time we cut or straighten our hair to be professional, for the times we pretend to be happy around our managers after seeing photos of them in blackface, for the days we show up to work and smile after watching our brothers and sisters lynched on live stream, for the times we are told to go back to our country and we would go if we knew what country we came from. This is for all the times we wore the mask.
Days after the story broke, he read that statement at an artist talk at the National Museum of Art at Duke University, where part of the Behind the Mask series is on display. Watson told me it was an emotional experience because it was one of the first times he'd read it in public and that it means even more to him now after what happened with the Tarred Healing exhibition.
Behind the Mask for me was almost like a manifesto for like how I was going to move forward in the art world and be unapologetic about like what I was going to say about our stories. And so I think that's also why the situation with the Stone Center and the exhibition was disappointing, because we weren't being completely our most authentic selves and telling truths unapologetically. You know, if we can't talk about Clayton Summers and his ties to Silent Sam and all the other systems, if we can't talk about like the lack of diversity on the Board of Trustees, you know, if we can't talk about the past to present ties of Sonia Haynes Stones and Nicole Hannah Jones, if we can't talk about like, you know, all the fighting that the students have done to memorialize James Cates, then like, what is that space even for if we can't talk about those things, you know?
That experience of erasure is one that Black artists frequently have when they work with historically white institutions. How did it make Watson feel to have this decision come from a Black cultural center?
I asked him that.
I don't necessarily feel like the decision came from a Black institution, like it came from a Black person that represents a white institution. Dr. Jordan has the power and agency to make the Stone Center a safe space and make it the place that it was supposed to be, that so many people had fought for a freestanding Stone Center. But his, particularly with this decision to censor out the Black student movement from the exhibition and then to eventually cancel the exhibition, is very counter to what those students and what the community fought for as it relates to the Stone Center.
Liz, do you think this is an isolated incident or part of a larger worrying trend at UNC?
To a certain extent, it is isolated because Jordan has made clear that the decision came from him and him alone, that no one else outside the Stone Center even knew about his decision to cancel the exhibition. Provost Chris Clemens, who's Jordan's boss, actually called Watson to apologize for how he was treated. But members of the UNC Chapel Hill community, professors, students, staff, have been talking about issues of academic freedom for years, and those conversations seem to be intensifying. I've seen it in faculty meetings, at protests, on Twitter, in conversations person to person, and in news reporting. These issues are stemming not only from decisions by governing bodies like the Board of Trustees, but also as a result of an environment at the university that lets people know we don't talk about certain things, or maybe more precisely, we don't support people who draw attention to certain things.
Right. Legal scholars have described this as the chilling effect of even the threat of censorship. So what happens next?
Watson says he's been overwhelmed with offers to display the full photo series, but he's focused on putting it up locally in Chapel Hill first.
At the end of the day, this is really about the stories of the Black community of Chapel Hill. And so, like, my hope is that their stories have an opportunity to be heard because they're all important, and that they have an opportunity to see themselves and feel like their legacy is honored.
The Chapel Hill Public Library is planning to exhibit the full photo series, Tarred Healing, later this spring.
That's all for this episode of Tested. Our editor is Dave DeWitt. I'm Anissa Khalifa. Thanks for listening.